I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This is Spoke, the all-new and exclusive podcast series with me, Chidera, a.k.a. The Slum Flower.
And me, Sully Brakes, poet, writer, spoken word, artist, etc., etc.
Where we discuss issues at the heart of youth culture and how music and literature are shaping the conversation. Microaggressions are all around us. They could constitute as asking to touch a black person's hair, or not even asking. Suggesting that one immigrant group is better than another, or asking where a person is really from.
Whether it's through malice or just sheer ignorance, these comments are far from harmless, and this unconscious bias filters into every corner of our life, from getting a job, to dating, to simply walking home.
Connections seared into our mind by false narratives given to us by the media feed a culture of racial assumptions and lay the groundwork for systemic violence and racial profiling.
But how ingrained is racism in our culture? What are the steps we can take to combat it? And what should you say when someone asks to touch your hair?
I love it. In this show, we discuss microaggressions, stereotypes, and institutionalized racism and its effects on day-to-day life. When was the last time someone asked to touch your hair, Sully?
The hair that's left. They've been throwing shade at me, yeah, because
it's healthy
all
shade.
Season long.
Healthy shade.
Because as a man, you know.
I deal with hair loss, so I can't really shade you.
Okay, cool. My hair's not even losing like that. I just choose to cut it low to a respectable length, you get what I'm saying? I'm done. When I was what? When I was 18, I had the cuts in my eyebrows, you know, I had the tube side parting, and all of that stuff.
That was usually.
Yeah, that was me, boy.
Are there any pictures still up on the internet?
Nah. We had to leave that for the public, from public image, you know what I mean? I had all that, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, when was the last time someone asked you to touch your hair?
Well, the thing is, with me, because I'm very, very, you know, visually exciting when I have my hair in a massive afro a very colourful, flamboyant outfit, I often don't get people ask. They just touch me regardless.
Really?
Yeah, so people often think that if they have a level of familiarity with me, that if I change up my hair, they can just put their hand inside it. And by people, I'm referring to white people. They just put their hair inside it and fiddle and then remove their hand. They'll be like, oh, you changed up your hair. This looks good on you. I love this pink one on you. But the thing is, I don't take it as a compliment, even though they insist that it's a compliment, because you're othering me and you're treating me like I'm otherworldly. Because when I, you know, come across a white person who has changed up their hairstyle, maybe they've gotten a balayage done or they've
What's a balayage?
A balayage is a particular bleaching technique.
Okay.
So maybe you got a balayage done and you got a nice haircut as well, or maybe you've got extensions glued in. I'm not going to come up to you and be like, oh, Susan, your hair's like 3 inches longer. Did it grow overnight? How do you get it like that? Do you sleep with that on? No, what happens is I see them as people and I recognise that they're multifaceted and that they change up their hair, but that humanity is not afforded to me. I'm constantly having to answer to people asking me about my hair. And even when I get, you know, compliments about my massive afro,
yeah,
I don't even want to hear those compliments anymore, because those compliments aren't coming from a healthy place. It's coming from it's almost like
perverse,
you see this
kind of
it's like you see this like neon coloured raccoon. You're going to be like, oh my gosh.
It's that whole kind of Sarah Bartman kind of conversation.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, it's not to that extreme,
of
but
course
it's,
not,
like,
but it's still the whole idea of, you know, you see a black woman and you want to inspect her because you feel entitled because she interests you. But I don't think that I need to thank anybody for pointing out that I'm different just because they said it nicely.
That makes sense. I remember there's a friend of mine, she works in a law firm, and I remember she changed her hair. I think she normally has her hair straight. Well, she doesn't relax, she normally wears a wig. And then I think she came in one day with her hair in extensions or something like that. And the first thing they said was, "You look like Beyonce." My friend looks nothing like Beyonce. Like, I can't even articulate how much she looks nothing like Beyonce.
So
like,
much
she's a dark skinned Nigerian black, she looks nothing like Beyonce. Do you know what I'm saying?
But the thing is, it's because people. There's quite a few things happening here. So number one is that people assume that you want to look like Beyonce. And the reasons for that are because, you know, the world views lighter skinned black women as more desirable. And obviously Beyonce is lighter skinned.
So it's a compliment by saying she looks like Beyonce.
It's
basically
a compliment, yes.
That's like, the best level of compliment I can give you.
But also it's this idea that Beyonce is seen as the pinnacle of what black womanness is. Which, you know, I mean, in certain contexts, I do agree with that. She's definitely the queen of her work.
Yeah,
and that's
the
not
beehive,
disputable. But in the context of blackness and complimenting women and comparing them to Beyonce, it's quite a difficult one. And I don't think it's very productive, but it's quite lazy.
Yeah, 100% it is. Yeah, I can totally agree with that. I think when it does come to the subjects of like underlying kind of racial comments or like ideology, I think my one is still that typical kind of, like, I had this event the other day at The Economist, and when we were walking into the building, the security guard ran to the door and was like, "Oh, we're coming in." And he asked, "Are you sure you're supposed to be here?" Do you get what I'm saying? It's that typical kind of, like, that stereotypical, you don't belong in this environment kind of space, you know what I mean? And he was, even when we came in, he was completely shocked. Like, you know, it wasn't even just like, "Who are you looking for?" It's like, "Are you sure you're supposed to be here?" Shadira, would you like to introduce our guest?
Yes.
You're the introducer.
Yes. This is my, do you know what? I feel like I need to be hired as those people that introduce the boxers before they get on the ring.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that needs to be that's my second calling. I think that's what I'm going to rebrand and evolve into.
I think that would really work for you.
It's time.
I think it would.
It's definitely time.
I definitely think
so. So on the left, we have Iggy!
London!
Oh, I like that. That was nice. I like the combo.
And on the right, in a white t-shirt, Yomi Shode!
Shode!
Hey! Do you want to introduce yourself? Introduce yourself, Yomi.
Oh my God.
Why are you amazing? Why are you excellent?
Bro, this guy's gonna try to do a humble thing. This guy.
Don't let him have it.
No, this guy's honestly one of. No, seriously. This guy is not only a talented poet, but he's honestly one of the most genuine guys I know, because he may not remember this, but I remember one of the first times we performed together. And I remember afterwards, I was really impressed by the performance. I remember this guy giving me his number and we spoke on the phone, and we spoke maybe for like half an hour on the way home. And this guy was probably telling me about, this is what to do. Like all these little kind of things that most people wouldn't take time to tell you, do you get what I'm saying? And this was me starting out very, very early. And I remember that, and I always remember that, and I really appreciate that. And he's talented, and I went to watch his show. You're going to talk about it, but I want to talk about it properly. Colt. So we went to watch his show, Colt. Now I'm doing the intro for you. It's called Colt.
Where can we find it?
Before you go into that, let me tell you what this guy does during the show. Yeah, this guy spends the show and he's cooking during the show. He's cooking.
What are you cooking?
He's cooking jollof.
Wow.
No, cooking jollof.
What is it?
Before everyone gets too high.
Okay, sorry.
It is a traditional Nigerian tomato stew.
Jeez.
It is that.
Rice and stew.
And we're having some plain rice to try to go with that. But yeah. Man, so I'm a writer, poet, playwright, musician as well, actually. Worked with a band, got an album and an EP out. Yeah, last music gig was Wireless Festival in 2013. So, like, and then I took the break from that to work on what will be the play that we premiered last year. And we're touring this year. So we're back in London later on. In the year, October, what have you. So, and I run a monthly night as well called Boxed In alongside Sean Mahoney and Amina Jammer.
Yeah.
And
Cecilia
Knapp.
Serious night.
And it's a monthly, it's the longest running open mic night in Box Park.
Wow.
6 years in October. And it's the quickest, I'll claim it.
That's amazing.
But I'll claim it is the quickest open mic night. 2 hours on the last Tuesday of every month. So come, it's free. So
sick.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
A lot,
on
more
that.
Stuff, but that's about it, man.
And Iggy,
modest.
You're out here chilling in the corner. I can see you. Do you want to introduce yourself?
We don't need humility, you know. Sell yourself.
We're not doing that, yeah.
Let the people know.
Be relentlessly great today.
We've got serious guests here.
I'm so dead. So yeah, my name is Iggy, also known as Iggy London, and I'm an ex-poet. Yeah, I'm an ex-poet, but I'm a director and writer. And my first ever film was called Black Boys Don't Cry. And it basically went...
Was that in Tate? I saw that.
Yeah, that was in the Tate.
I actually watched it as well.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It was on Fader, you know, just loads of crazy places. And that was my first ever film. And I kind of had like a £100 budget, self-funded it. And I was like, you know, I need to do something which is about masculinity. I felt like I was... You know, I had to just, you know, I had to be a spokesperson for that kind of topic. Mm. And then kind of directed a film called Fatherhood and then just put out a film
called... Are you a father?
No. But it was about my relationship with my own father. And I think it's important that we kind of share those kind of like topics and those nuances. And then, yeah, later on I did I recently just put out a film called Velvet, and it's basically about... the loss of a son, you know, through a mother's perspective. And kind of like at the start this year, we lost a really, really, really talented and, you know, like great person called Harry. And he lost his life to knife crime. And I feel like I had to, I don't know, I felt sad, very sad. That was the first, one of the major kind of like losses that I saw. I was like, wow, it affected so many people,
yeah.
Like on Instagram, on like Facebook. But I was like, can you imagine their like family? Can you imagine his mum like right now? Mm-hmm. So I done a film that basically tries to, you know, look at the mother's intuition and so as the, you know, the son is losing his life.
Don't spoil it, because I started watching it and it looks amazing.
Yeah.
My Wi-Fi keeps on stopping at the part when the son's in the house and he darts in.
Okay.
And it kept on stopping at the same point. And I was like, this, because you start with the panning shop up the stairs and this looks so dope. Yeah. And it kept on stopping at that point. Don't spoil it.
Check it out. Yeah. But it's very emotional, very intense, but I feel like it's needed. I feel like we need to actually speak about these topics in a raw way. And like, we need to be able to understand that communities are being broken by knife crime, being broken by violence, and we can't look at and become, we can't be desensitized to the fact that we see gang, you know, murdered 15-year-old. We can't keep just on having these rhetorics, these conversations, and being like, yeah, it's normal, whilst we, you know, open up our Sunday Times or whatever. We need to be able to actually have these meaningful conversations with ourselves and not just allow other people to narrate them for us. But yeah, I did that, and yeah, I'm a writer as well, so yeah, that's me.
Those are our esteemed guests in the building. I still know
Iggs as the poet, because the last I saw,
can I just
Iggy
say
was,
having said that, can I just say the first place I ever performed was at Boxed.
Oh wow.
Boxed In, yeah.
Wicked.
first
Destiny.
And I remember literally like going quivering, I mean shaking.
Aww.
Like Bambi on, I think I was like 20, and I was just petrified because I was like, there's just so many lit people, and like, you got Yomi here, and I'm like, damn, like, what am I gonna say? I literally was like, he was like, come on, just do it, just go. And like, okay, cool, fine. Go up, and it was well received, but yeah, I was mad gas.
You're not an expert,
so thank you,
to me, man.
The film's is poetry, we take that,
let's do that.
From the scenes I saw, it was poetry, but then my Wi Fi will determine the rest,
didn't
it?
So I spoke earlier with Sully about, you know, me being a black woman and my relationship with my hair and the microaggressions that I have to endure surrounding that. I'm curious about your own experience as black men with microaggressions. Like, what kind of microaggressions have you faced in this room, all three of you? Because I'm like outnumbered here.
For the first time. When you and Monroe and Poppy, you lot just, I was just solo here, boys.
No, I'm in your shoes.
You guys have to ride out.
There's so many on a day to day that I am, that, you know, you face. But kind of like the first thing that I kind of realized, I was like, oh wow, yeah, I'm really like, I'm definitely,
it's real out here.
Is when someone, I remember I used to like do creative stuff, and I performed at an event one time, and then someone came up to me like when I was super super young. I was like, oh, like, where are you from? And I was like, yeah, I'm from like East London. And they didn't follow back with that, oh, no, where you really, really, really from. They were like, which is another microaggression. But they said, you've seen, like, people get stabbed in it.
Oh, wow.
Like, you've seen, like, people die in it. Like, you must, because you're from ends in it. Yeah. So, East London. How many people have you, seen, like, lose their life?
Yeah.
And you literally go, whoa. Oh, like, you're not, like... Iggy, like trying to like navigate into this world. You're like, no, Iggy, who's like obviously related to this, I was connected to this.
Where were you performing?
I think it was at the I forgot the name. It was like the Savoy Theatre. That's it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The Savoy Theatre, and like, yeah, like it was just a really amazing experience because I was so gassed. I was like, you know, I was out of ends. I was like living my best life. I was like, yeah, this is it. I'm going to be like the performer, you know.
I made it.
I made it fully. And then as like, I was reminded of like what people think I should be like really quickly off the bat. And I was like, wow, okay, well, this is my experience. This is what I need to be careful of and navigate around.
Yeah. Mine was more subtle, you know. I was at work. I was by the computer doing what I'm doing. And right next to me was a book. I was reading The Sellout at the time. And lady approaches. Between me and the book is another colleague or what have you. And someone approaches, them, like, just in between us or what have you. Mm. And then just takes a look at the book and then looks at the colleague next to me. And is like, oh, good book. And then she then says, no, it's not.
Yeah, it's not.
it's not mine type thing, yeah? So there's only one way you can look now. Do you know what I mean? So she then looks my way. And then, because I'm like, imagine someone just hovering over you, just looking.
Yeah.
So now she looks my way. So now I can now see your shade kind of shadow type thing near me, my personal space. So I'm looking at her and she went, interesting. I'm like, oh, what's interesting? And then she's like, she looks at it. And she gestures the book. It's like, you know. And then she said, oh, wouldn't expect you to be...
I knew that was coming.
Wow.
Wouldn't expect you to
be...
Wouldn't expect you to be, you know.
Yeah.
And then I said, and then I'm like, oh, hey, it not was, today, yeah. old guy, not today.
Oh, you clapped back.
Wait, it was imperative. So, listen.
I'm dead.
So then I was like, so when she said, oh, I wouldn't expect you to be... And then I said, what? To read. And then she's, and then it's instant. It's a thing of, oh, I'm like, what didn't you mean? And then it got even more worse, innit? And then she's like, and then she walked off.
Really?
Oh, what could she do?
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, you ain't going to do that. Because if I allowed that to happen, if I allowed that conversation to carry on, then I will be sat with that energy.
Yeah, real
because
talk.
Because the energy, it means nothing to her. Mm. She would have left me feeling... That's a good way to look at it, actually.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about microaggressions to a certain degree is when it happens, you have to internalize it, but no one necessarily informs you of how to kind of release that.
So then you carry that.
And then people are going to be like, oh, you're intimidating. You're this. Mm-hmm. If I go through moments like that every day through my 9-to-5, how you expect me to be dealing when you're trying to have normal conversations with me if I feel like you're just going to try to pull something on me differently?
That's a real talk.
You know? So that was just, yeah. But that when that happened, I was like, I can't take that energy today. You come with that, you leave with it. I'm refusing to take that today. Mm.
So Lee, what's been your experience with microaggressions?
Oh, man. I'm just a microaggressor attractor all over the place. The more I've grown in my career, the more unapologetic I've become in terms of like how I conduct myself, how I speak, even to the way I dress. So when I first started... with doing poetry and because of what I spoke about, I was always in a lot of kind of like what people would pursue as like established or like prestigious places. So I used to wear like a shirt and trousers. Then it got to the point where it's like, I just wear what I'd normally wear, you know what I mean? I would wear my tracksuit, I'd wear my hoodie, whatever. And then that came, then it was often that kind of like dynamic of like, are you really supposed to be here? Do you know what I mean? Or that kind of instinctively intimidated, like, you know, I mean, I got invited to go to this thing and I don't think I'm going to go, so I probably won't mention it. But it's something to do with, it's happening in Black History Month and they invite, it's like the royal family. I don't want to mention the specific members. It's not Harry or Meghan. So if it was them, I probably would have gone because Harry's kind of like, he rides out a bit anyway. So I got invited. They're doing this event. It's in the middle of Black History Month. So they're trying to celebrate like West the African community within London, you know, as they do during Black History Month, innit? And I was kind of like, if I go to this place, I can't wear like what I feel comfortable wearing, innit? Do you get what I'm saying? So I said, for me, I'm not even going to bother kind of go.
Did they put a dress code?
No, there's no dress code. But you know when it had the stamp at the bottom, you know the stamp?
Oh, was it mailed to you?
No, it wasn't mailed.
It was emailed. The reason I'm trying to figure out is because, why wouldn't they put...
No, it was
celebrating British West African communities, is that what you said?
Not African communities, yeah.
Oh, celebrating African communities.
Yeah, African communities, yeah. But it's kind of like in the height of when they haven't done anything, like with the Windrush situation, all that kind of stuff. Mm. What it feels like is going to be a bunch of us standing there taking a photo to make it seem like, yeah, we're doing stuff for the culture. Right? Yeah. Right now, do you get what I'm saying? So for me, I was like, I was in two minds. Then the deciding factor was, will I be able to dress how I want to dress to go here? And I looked at it and I thought, yeah, I don't think it's going to be that kind of... I'll get there and then the security guard will say to me, are you here? Are you supposed to be here? Do you get what I'm saying? So
And that's so interesting that you said that, because it's like, you, of course, there isn't... You're faced with a situation and you have to respond back and you're like, okay, cool, but there's so many... In your head, you've kind of like figured out all the situations that could possibly happen. Yeah. And that's the thing with microaggressions, is that suddenly it puts you in a place where you can't be yourself.
Yes, exactly.
And the only problem is like... There's nothing that's happened. They put forward, they're giving you an invite, they're telling you to come to this, blah, 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 blah.
It's
you're
a
like,
trap.
I'm gasping. And you already believe that this is not possible for me. I can't be here, because if I was to be here, I would be faced with all of this and it's going to make me feel a certain
stress,
type of way.
And again, it's that anxiety that. So now, because you've been sent that invite, you are already thinking of all the red flags.
Yeah, definitely.
That.
You know what I mean?
Folks to a certain degree won't necessarily have to consider as much, you know, but you, there are so many that you're like, this could be actually good for my career progression or whatever it is, and da 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 da.
Yeah.
But due to the amount of
things that have
happened in the past, you can almost dictate how this is going to roll out.
Exactly.
So as a result, nah, I'm good, which is a shame, because whatever opportunities could come.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
You're letting go of that, but your heart is.
It's conflicted. You're torn.
No, you're at some kind of peace.
Even not necessarily. Yeah.
Because you know that you won't have to. You won't have to deal with that. Because even if you dealt with that, you then give in to the assumptions of you.
Yeah.
Your body, your whatever you might be wearing, everything would then speak out in terms of, oh, that's why the attitude is there.
Exactly.
What, do you know what I mean? And you're thinking that in your head, which is wrong. It's not.
Because
fair.
The onus is on you to deal with it, not them.
So, on this show, as you know, we always make sure that our guests bring items with them for us to discuss. So, Iggy, what did you bring with you?
Oh, what my lie. So, basically...
What are you not?
What my lie. Absolute liberty. So, what I did was that I looked, I was like, okay, cool, what can I bring? I was like, I'm going to bring a track. I'm going to bring a song that really resonated with me. And obviously, I don't have long, 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 big, like, you know, braids or... like you know, hair, but I was like, there's this song that really pushed kind of the understanding of microaggressions and the response to microaggressions, and that's Solange's "Don't Touch My Hair," and that, that's a tune, obviously, lyrically,
big mood.
Exactly, it's a big mood, it's a you know, life mood, life goals. But you know what? I realized the reason why, like, I resonate with it, even though obviously I don't have hair.
You got the waves,
you have
though.
Hair on your
the waves are swimming. Accept them,
like,
boy.
Yeah, like, I appreciate it and that.
But, and you have a beard as well, which
The violation is if someone tries to stroke your beard.
Yeah, it's
oh my gosh,
it's
that happened to you before?
Yeah, like...
Someone come on unsolicited stroke. You.
Like, oh, they just grab your chin. They just grab the whole chin. They don't even stroke.
The chin.
And they face, they like, they move you. It's like,
who's doing that to you?
He's like, yo. I can name a few.
Have you had women do that to you?
Yes, Shoreditch. Near Ace Hotel. And
oh gosh, I don't go near them.
Yeah, it's a bit like, oh,
that
yeah.
That side's just really annoying.
Yeah, it's a bit like,
it's about trust fund type.
No.
Girl.
Anyway. Trust fund hands in your beard.
Honestly.
I'm so sorry.
And not a real coin. Like,
thank you for sharing your
story.
It's
like the mediocre coin. Anyway, I'm so done. But yeah, Don't Touch My Hair was a mood, because it allowed me to realize that, yo, this is not okay. You positioning yourself in such a level makes you feel that you are better than, you can navigate more that, and you understand the dynamics, but yet you're still going to impose yourself on my culture, on my, the way I dress, the way I want to represent myself. And that's the difficulty, is like knowing fully well that that's not okay. So Don't Touch My Hair. It's like, don't do it. I don't care who you are, but you are not allowed to, because I need to understand. I need to, you know, perpetuate my own autonomy, my ability, my own, you know, agency to do whatever I want. And I can walk down the street without someone looking at me and just thinking that I'm a beard. Mm-hmm. I'm just, oh yeah, I'm contoured face because I've got a beard. Like, listen, you can't do that. And yeah, I feel like we need to, yeah, it was just a massive kind of like, right of like, yeah, you can do your thing. Yeah.
big mood. Man. Yomi, what item did you bring with you?
So, mine is a song, also, and it's by an artist called Tawia. Tawia is an amazing singer. She's been doing this.
How is her name spelled, please?
Tawiah.
Oh, Tawia. Okay.
Yeah. And the track is called Faces. So Tawia is Ghanaian.
And, big up the Ghanaian crew in there.
And this song is actually like it was significant in the process of me writing the play, because it just came at some point midway, and so basically in the video she's gone back to Ghana. So the chorus of it is, if I can remember it, the chorus is, "Where is this place I'm standing? I recognize all the faces, but they don't seem to know mine." So what she's trying to kind of correlate within there is, because at some point she's lived her life, or I'm assuming she lived her life in Britain. So it's one of them ones where you go back to what you might consider home, be it Ghana or wherever or what have you. And the community in which she's probably surrounded by, they deal with her different. And when I went to Nigeria, I felt that this is why this spin of microaggressions is quite interesting, and it's kind of double fold. Because when I went to Nigeria, it was interesting how they just called me the British kid.
Yeah.
So they saw my studs or what have you, my hoops, and they were just like, yeah, we're not talking to you. You don't understand our customs here. You're Nigerian, but
you're not really Nigerian.
Are you Nigerian?
British boy.
And then in England, obviously, I'm going through microaggressions also. So
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This song was important for me because here we have a woman that is very strong, very, very, she connects with her heart and her work. And this song, I can only imagine that is just as emotional for her in the process of writing and singing. And when I saw the video, it's that I saw myself in that. I'm not going to talk to her, but if I was in that position, when I went to Nigeria, and I had a really bad experience when I went one time, and it was all of that, but it was all of what I've been told over the years is like, England is not your home,
yeah,
type thing, right? So I'm like, oh, let's get this cracking. So what, Nigel's the yard? That is nice.
Coming to America.
So then when I actually arrived there, and then the situations that I've been put into, people that I was talking to, it just did not make me feel like I was home. Right?
When do you feel the most at home?
When do I feel? Well, this is the thing. Like, I can't. It's interesting how I feel like home is this kind of thing that kind of moves.
Yeah.
It's just ever moving. It's just very fluid motion thing. And that's why the play for me was important, because I had to kind of signify what the process is of how do you locate home, and within there, what is the acceptance that comes with it. So when I'm in England, there is a certain type of acceptance that I'm kind of looking for. When I'm in Nigeria, there's a certain kind of acceptance. I'm trying to cook this stew for my mum to show her that I still got it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you ain't lost me to fish and chips out in these streets. Do you know what I mean? Some indomie in the cupboard. Like, let's not get this
don't
twisted.
Know about the indomie.
But those things don't necessarily mean that I am connected, right? And there are many ways that people can make you feel like you're part of a culture or you're part of home, so to speak. So it's still something that I'm navigating every day, but I'm in a better sense of mind right now of understanding it. So that's why the song was important to me, because I feel like that's what she was trying to convey in the song, which leads perfectly to the topic that we're talking about.
So in the context of you, I think you addressed the play a lot as well in regards to this conversation. And we're talking about microaggressions, institutionalized racism. Both of you are kind of in industries which are not as democratic as, say, like music or, you know, or sports, you know what I mean? So how do you think, like, institutional racism and all these microaggressions, how do you think they've not only affected your work and what you create, but also, like, your career and, like, your eventual trajectory, you know what I mean? Because you're in theatre right now, you're doing plays, and it's hard. That's one thing I respect about you, is that you're doing a lot of it independently, do you understand what I'm saying? Then, obviously, with Iggy, a lot of the subjects you're touching on, I mean, they resonate with you and your peers, but are you ever thinking the fact that when I'm trying to progress within in this industry, do I have to dilute the content or do I have to change these subjects to make them more appealing or commercially viable?
100%. So first and foremost, like, especially when looking at your work, you really want it to resonate with people, you really want it to touch people, but at the same time, you don't want to be considered as the black director, because suddenly you realise that if you're considered the black director, number one, people think that you can do things for, like, not as big a budget as other people, and you're not capable of
trying to low blow you.
Yeah, they
don't want to give you the bag.
They
want you to secure the bag.
Exactly.
I need
to secure every single piece of coin. So yeah, like, it was mad, and I kind of internalised that. I'm like, oh, maybe I shouldn't talk about black issues. Oh, I can't talk about black issues. If I was to talk about black issues, people wouldn't respect me as much, or production companies wouldn't sign me. And I was like, okay, but I really want to talk about black issues, because nobody's talking about these black experiences in a really interactive way. So how do I tap into that? And then suddenly you start thinking, oh, well, maybe I'm not supposed to be this filmmaker. Maybe I've kind of, like, shot myself in the foot because I feel like I need to be this thing, but really I can't be, because I really want to talk about this, you know, a mother's experience.
Yeah.
And so that's another thing when looking at, and also understanding what filmmakers, if you type into Google filmmaker or director, you're going to see a certain type of person, and that person usually wears jeans.
White.
Yes, that and a Uniqlo black t-shirt with you know, some, like, brogues. And that's unfortunate because, I don't know, that's unfortunate because it's like, what we should be pushing our children, you know, the younger generation, is that they can be anything that they want to be.
100%.
So when I'm going into these spaces, I'm realising that, number one, oh, geez, I am the only black director. Or I'm, you know, I'm unsigned. And you start to think, oh, is that because, you know, they don't rate me, they don't think I'm this, they don't think I'm that. And you start to internalise it and you go, why don't I just do something for, I don't know, like, Justin Bieber. Let me just direct something. Let me just make sure, like, it's all palatable and I feel all cute and, like, they can, like, pitch me to other people. It's actually what I need to do, what I need to do. And that's what, another thing that I would tell anyone who's experiencing microaggressions, is that do not feed into it. Do not accept it and be like, okay, cool, this is what I'm going to do. If you're in a position that you can do that, I think it's important to wear your hair out. Have the braids.
Bar of the day. You know, we have this thing whereby when people drop a sick metaphor, we try to take note in it. I'm usually the champion of the best one, but yeah. That you're a contender today. That was a nice
tango,
one. I like that one. That was a good metaphor.
But yeah, like, I feel like it's important that we don't just sell ourselves out. Jeez, you see if I did that, sell out, done, not out. But yeah, like, we've got...
Oh my God, it just hit me.
He's coming for the throne. He's coming for the crown.
We can't.
Ex-poet.
Ex-poet.
Good. Listen, out here.
These words out here.
Yeah. But yeah, we've got to do better. We've got to, like, really teach ourselves that we are. It's possible to do these things, and we have to. I think sometimes, although it's difficult, I think we have to go to those events and we're invited to, because representation is key. But at the same time, we don't want to be in those spaces that's going to harm us. So we have to tell them that this is not okay. And I think that's another thing as well. We can't allow people just to walk away. We've got to tell them.
Yeah, that's a really important point.
I might actually go, actually.
Yeah, because when you said that, I really was thinking about it. And there have been so many times where I used to hold that, have that mentality. And it is a valid mentality. And I don't think it's flawed in any way.
At all.
But I would think, why am I accepting an invitation from someone who has literally built an entire, you know, empire on destroying my life? But then the thing is, one thing that sticks in my mind is I can't change the conversation if I'm not at the table. And I take it as an opportunity for me to go there and show up as my full self. Because the thing is, as long as you've been invited,
exactly,
that moment is
do
already
whatever
yours.
You wanna do.
So for me, I'm like, okay, if I got invited to that kind of thing, I will show up in my full traditional wear, especially because the event is British West African or African specific. Yeah. But even if it wasn't, I'm still showing up in my traditional wear because I'm representing my country.
Fully.
I love it. Love
but
it.
But also, I would want to make sure that me showing up and me moving through the world afterwards, the two don't confuse each other. So what I mean by that is, after I show up at that event, I'm not going to suddenly dilute myself. I'm still going to be, anything, more pro-black.
Yeah.
Because I want people to understand that if you can move through any space you want to, as long as you're creating some sort of change, it's going to get people's attention. It's going to prick their ears up. And so whether that's recognition from the royal family, recognition from the government, recognition from the film industry, whatever it is, I think the most important thing is just maintaining your identity and living in and walking in the reason why you initially started. And I think that's what you're doing. Yeah. So I don't see this as a threat to your true message or how genuine you are, because you have to expect that if you do choose to do something like that, be prepared for people to say things like, oh my God, Silly Breaks has sold out. Like, now he's doing up Kiki Key with the royal family. Like, don't you know they don't like you? Why are you being a coon? Can you not see? Like, I knew this would happen. This always happens.
Always happens.
Now he's a Freemason.
We take off.
He's gone and sold his soul.
I'm tired of you.
For what? What did you sell your soul for? What? Another 1,000 views? No, I could never do that. The person that I could never do that is never going to be in a position to do that. So prepare yourself for that, and I think that's something that, you know, is something to consider, because a lot of decisions we make, including saying no, is out of fear. I'm not letting fear control how I move through my life, because when I get to like 80 years old, is a decision that I made at 20 or at 30 gonna be important enough for me to sit there pondering during my last days wishing I'd never done that?
Yeah. True. No, I think you guys have definitely given me a new perspective on it, because I sort
of, you deserve to be whatever you're
invited
to.
It got sent to me and I was like, oh, this is going to be long, but I hear what you lot are saying.
Long for who?
I feel like
long
I have a responsibility.
No, but long for who? Who's this person? Who's this person that's convinced you that it's a bad idea? I want to know.
Let's beef
that. it's an important conversation, because I do think that there are a lot of, you know, people who probably will have the same thoughts, and it might not even just be, you know, royal family. It could be like a company could reach out to them and they might, you know, instinctively knee-jerk and out of fear, they'll be like, I don't want to be seen working with someone people have decided to agree on disliking. But the thing about that is, again, it's about why you are there.
Yeah, 100%.
Because there are people who have come before us who have been in those spaces and are black just like us.
Interesting. That's an interesting way, because we had a discussion. Do you remember the conversation we had in New York?
Yeah. I'm like, so it's what, 2016? We're in New York at the same time, but for different, like,
unplanned.
So I'm doing a gig. Because then afterwards, we went for a bite to eat, but and that was a cool spot as well.
Yeah, it was nice.
But the reason why that was important was we just got into talking. And I know that I asked you a question in regards, well, we explored I'm not a role model.
Yeah.
And just the unapologetic nature in which you are kind of speaking on that, right? And it was a very important conversation to have, because we touched on many things.
The M what?
MBE.
What, as in whether you would accept one or not?
That was where...
That's a conversation I'm always having with people, and I find it so interesting.
But then off of the back of that was the anxiety in terms of, like, especially within... the diaspora, to a certain degree, whether you would accept it, and, you know, the connotations in terms of, if you don't accept it, then this is it for your career and blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
And also, if you know, you shouldn't understand what this is meaning if you do accept all that stuff. So we spoke about that, you know, and I think the craft will always speak for itself. Like, me, I'm not a spokesman. Like, you won't see me all day kind of, you might get me a bit heated at some point talking on Twitter in terms of how I might feel to a certain degree, but more time, if there's anything I need to explore, I will explore it through my art. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
If we consider some of our favourite hip hop artists or whatever it is, now we're not necessarily hearing them speak outright, but we'll hear them talk through their art, right? And it was always through my art in which I would discuss anything that needs to be discussed. Now, in saying that, there is this kind of middle, it's a very thin line in terms of, the biggest gig is coming, but you're thinking to accept it or not, depending on the issues that are carrying. It's so difficult in terms of, but saying no is like, you know, like Chidira said, saying no is very important.
Yeah, the point I'm making is your first thought is fear, and then your second thought is who you actually are. In the same way, your first thought is what you've been conditioned to think by society, and your second thought is what you really think based on like how you view yourself and how you've learned to view the world. So that's why I'm always about like, ask yourself, am I making a choice out of fear, or do I really want to do this?
On that note, yeah, in the show, part of it is part of this traditional stew is
I love listen, this concept.
From young, we added meat. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So one of the suggestions was not to use meat, to be mindful of the non-meat.
So what did you use? Quinoa?
And I was like, listen. I was like, oh, hey, like, let us talk. Anyhow, I do this show and my mum's there and she sees this stew get made with no meat.
She disowned you.
Listen, the original troll for 2000 or whatever will be my mum.
Yeah, man, you get grilled for life. I will back her. What do you mean? But no then, meat to steal from the pot.
It's just empty metal. You're just going through.
Imagine your spoon actually goes in and comes out.
Your spoon is doing like free willy. You know when the whale just jumped?
Abomination.
So basically, that was that move. And also part of the show was Yoruba. I'm speaking in Yoruba. And there was a lot of, why are you not translating it? Why are you not doing da-da-da-da-da-da-da? But to the craft, to the unapologetic nature of it, and to the truth of that I'm speaking, is I am not budging. And there is something about the stance in which you have to take, because even if you don't understand it, there are moves and gestures that you will get. And also this speaks to a community that actually
gets it,
a community that will actually access theatre, that will actually sit into that and actually see something that is for them. So this is actually greater than me. But it's speaking through my craft without me necessarily doing a massive status on it on a Facebook, because I'm talking about it there. But look through my threads. I've never addressed this in terms of all of this, but I'm doing it through the art. Through the work. I think there's many ways that you can speak through the work without necessarily being that social media warrior all day, every day, to kind of emphasize what you're trying to get across. You can do it in the work.
And that's why you're so authentic, man. That's why the work is authentic, for sure.
You can do it through the work, you know?
That was wonderful. Ah, that was such a great conversation. Thank you so much, both of you, for sharing your stories and really just engaging in this discussion to do with microaggressions and blackness and being a man. And like, what's been really, really heartwarming for me is seeing you three just show each other so much love, like unfiltered, relentless love. It started with Sully being like, do not self-deprecate, do not downplay your greatness. I think that's something that's really important for black men to hear from other black men. It's super vital that you receive that love from people who look exactly like you and are going through exactly what you're going through.
For sure.
Can I ask you a question?
You can ask me a question.
Because, like, again, in following the work that you're doing, I can imagine the onslaught of microaggressions or the onslaught of backlash that you're getting. How do you deal with that on a day-to-day in terms of, like, how do you process? And the thing is, internalizing it can also lead to, should we kind of go down a mental health route and whatever it is, it can weigh heavy. So, one, you're very outspoken, but that also comes with its own...
Of course, it always
does. Do you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So what's your balance in it? And when it gets a bit much, how do you deal with it?
For me, thank you for that question. I love it.
I feel like I've asked you off air as well the same question. I feel like everyone wants to know.
For me, I'm learning to understand that people decide whether you're bad or good. And that is not a decision that you can influence in any way. And if you try to, then you're living outside of who you truly are.
Preach.
Because the way that we respond to other people making mistakes, or the way we respond to people living on the opposite end of what we define as the right way, actually shows the way that we speak to ourselves. It displays what the inner voice sounds like. And so what happens is you see a lot of behavior on the internet where people pile up on one person and just, you know, tell them things like, you're wrong, you're a bad person, you deserve this, and all kinds of horrible things. And regardless of whether that person has provoked it or not, the bigger issue is why people feel like it's worth it to send abuse to someone And I found that when people present resistance to, you know, leaving you alone or forgiving you, that's because they're very resistant to self-forgiveness too. You can often tell how someone talks to their self when they make a mistake by how they talk to someone else who's made a mistake. So I'm learning to detach myself from that and recognise and realise that, for me, how someone chooses to respond to me is not a reflection of my own intrinsic worth as a person, because they are only responding to a version of me that they've been able to see. But even what they can see is influenced by how they've been able to respond to the world since they were a child. And so that's what allows me to have peace in knowing that instead of dedicating energy to trying to change myself according to what the world wants from me, I can actually invest that energy personally and work on being a person who doesn't have to, you know, have knee-jerk reactions to the world. I can actually, you know, move through the world and have a few arrows thrown at me, but recognise that those arrows are coming from a place of pain in someone else's life, and they're not coming to me because I deserve to be in pain.
Hey, Charlie, come on.
Preach! Preach! Gospel!
When I listen back to that, to this podcast, I listen to this segment just to decipher everything.
Hey. I just have it on loop.
Thank you for that awesome question.
But I want to ask everyone before we go, what have you learnt today? Because this conversation, as much as it's about sharing insights and encouraging each other to have these fragile discussions, the most important thing is that we're all on the same level of learning. So I'm going to start with you, Yomi. What have you learnt today?
I think I've learnt that there isn't, you can't cap a time on this type of topic or theme. Like, it feels like I wouldn't even think like an hour or so has gone by already, and we just touched on, we're great, we're just tickling it. Do you know what I mean? I feel like there's so much, and I feel like that I really don't know what the outlet is in terms of received microaggressions and how Black people specifically process this. I don't know, because it's a thing of there's an additional anxiety that I have to deal with on a day-to-day basis whenever it's received. And whose responsibility is it to deal with that anxiety when it's received, other than mine? Because then if it's not, it's almost like I'm having to deal with this internal battle and this person just walked off. And I'm like, what do I do with that? That can really mess. And I don't even understand how people don't understand that, how this can mess up someone's entire day, right? So that's my current thinking. And this discussion has got me analysing that. Right now, all I do is write. So I can only express it through writing. The work.
Yeah.
But personally, I have a boy. He's 4 years old.
You have a four-year-old?
Yeah. How am I going to...
What's his name?
Little Noah. Not Little Noah. His name is Noah.
Noah.
It's not
Lizzie. No,
Little Noah.
Young Noah.
Sorry, he's on a plane to Ghana. Yeah. He was kind of little then still.
Well, now when he sees a plane, it's like it's again to Ghana. Like, you see? Like, no. I need to go to Nigeria real quick, just to balance this.
We claimed this already, bro. We claimed already.
Don't go there. So yeah, it's that. It's a thing of, once I understand parts of it, how can I now start to kind of disseminate some of this information for my boy to understand?
Of course.
Because there's this additional responsibility of sharing, because our parents felt this, but
they didn't have access to the resources to be able to even articulate
So we had to really go through this pretty much on our Jack Jones. And then we go back to them, we talk about it. Oh, yeah. Ah, just send them one way. I'm like, but it's a different ball game right now, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, this is just my thinking right now. But yeah,
I appreciate that. Iggy, what have you learned today?
I've learned that I'm not the only one who experiences microaggressions. And that's a really fundamental thing. Like, sometimes you start to think that you're the only one in it. Like, you're like, if you don't go to this thing, blah, 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 then you're spoiling it. Then you're the only one that can be able to actually deal with it. So you won't ask for help. And I feel like it's important that when we realise that other people have gone before us, have done bits before us, that we can lean to someone else. We can lean to Yomi. We can lean to you and be like, listen, like, what, like, this is like my experience. How do I navigate through this? And also, I've learned that microaggressions are not just always about like white people telling Black people stuff. It can also come from, you know, a behavior that you might see from someone that you might feel as a part of your group. And it's important that we deal with that as a collective, and understand the nuances between Black people and understand the nuances between identities, and realize that, listen, like, there's subcultures, there's things that we have to deal with that other people might not even realise. White people might not even realise that these subcultures are, you know, exist. And so suddenly we start to react differently and we internalise that. And then that's why when we go to Africa and we're like, yo, what are you saying, bro? And we hear silence.
And
because they don't see us as brothers. They see us as like, oh, we're part of the white man's gaze and the part of the white man's group and blah, 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 blah. But we're like, yo, but I'm so here for you. Like, I'm really African, like, but they're looking at us differently. So that's another thing. And like, I'm really here for being able to celebrate and love ourselves. So we have to really push ourselves and be confident in spaces and, you know, go through and just do bits. Yeah, definitely.
What about you, Sully? What have you learned today?
I think I learned something and I had a revelation. I think when Yomi spoke about... Nah, today's been enlightening for me.
Your head must be like... Yeah, trust me.
I'm taking it in. When Yomi said the whole thing about, you know, when you have to check people when they're in the wrong, especially when you're talking about... Because you're right, because someone does something to you and you internalise that and your whole day you're just thinking, should I have done this? Why did I do this? But like you said, when you address it there and then, you've removed that pressure from you and that stress and you've given it to someone else who rightly so deserves to think about it. So no, that was definitely like a learning for me and I think I'm going to implement that going forward because sometimes we are too conservative. And then with the whole invite thing, when you guys were talking, when you said it, when Iggy said it, when he was like, there's a list of things that I've ticked off in my head that are really not fair for me to have to address for just going somewhere that I've been invited to be myself and represent what I want to represent. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, I might have to respond to that email still. Those were the two kind of...
For me, what I've learned from Yomi, actually, about unapologetic accessibility. And you displayed that in the form of, you know, speaking Yoruba in your play without translating it for white people. And that's a radical move because I don't see people being out like, oh, guys, why isn't Roald Dahl's books being translated into Yoruba? This is a major priority. It's not prioritised for people to translate Harry Potter into Yoruba. So I don't see why it should be a priority for me if I'm speaking my language to then pander and be like, oh, wait, there's someone important enough for me to stop my track of thinking and translate for them. If it's for you, then you understand it. And if you don't understand it, then you have to go out of your way to seek the resources to understand it in the same way Yoruba people have to go out of their way to go and learn English.
100%.
So I'm glad that you did that. And that's something that I'm definitely going to implement in my life. I mean, half of my book is written in Igbo, but I translated it because that was just necessary for the context of it. But I definitely do think that there are certain aspects of myself that don't need to be explained. And it's one of those things where if you know, then you know. But also if you know, then you're important. And I'm glad that you know. And if you don't know, then maybe this isn't for you and that's okay.
Yeah, we want to see James and the Giant pounded the abs.
The rainbow fish in Yoruba.
I own Nelly's Agusi Factory.
Agusi Factory. Yes. So has left. Yes. You said Agusi Factory. Oh my god, time out. Ayodele and the Agusi Factory.
I'm just spitting it out. I don't know,
oh,
man.
No. We're in Penguin HQ, so this might be
Let me paint in that.
Bestseller.
It might be there next year, yeah.
I think it's there, man. It's coming.
But thank you so much
for this wonderful discussion. I like this chemistry. Yeah, man, black up.
It was happening. It's working, isn't it? You know. I was intimidated at first.
I was a bit worried.
Because you articulate yourself so well. You know, she read the first paragraph and it was like professional. You know what I mean?
I'm dead.
This is just the yeah.
It's a good wax. It's a really good.
We got this. All love.
Congrats. Well done.
Thank you.